Good morning. It is about 8:10, and you are joining us live in Juneau, Alaska, in room 124 of the state capitol. With us this morning on Community and Regional Affairs is Representative Woody Salmon, Representative Sharon Cisna, Representative Kurt Olson, Representative Nancy Dahlstrom, Vice Chair Representative Newman, and myself, Co-Chair Representative Fairclough. Representative Ledoux is excused this morning and attending a constituent-related meeting in her area on fisheries. So with her permission, we are moving forward in hearing this morning, HB 243. Representative Newman, we do have a CS, if you could bring that before the body.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move CS for House Bill 243, version /C, for committee discussion.
Do all committee members have the CS?
I will.
Thank you. Just for technical support and help, those of you listening at home, you might need to turn up your dials, and those in the audience here, if you would turn off your cell phones. Those cell phones interrupt with our recorder and the ability for the microphones to work. It causes static over the lines, and so it blocks out those who are trying to listen at home. So in a silent mode just doesn't help us as much as turning it all the way off. So with that, we have Representative Jewell, HB 243 sponsor. Representative Jewell, are you ready for a presentation on your bill for the committee?
Yes, Madam Chairman.
Good morning.
Good morning, Madam Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, Representative Reggie Jewell, House District 40. I appreciate your hearing the bill today. And I'll make my introductory comments to the bill brief. This is an effort to improve the partnership between the state of Alaska and coastal communities under the Coastal Zone Management Program. This legislation will give coastal districts a seat at the table in the review of proposed state and federal resource development actions. An effective review process that accounts for local concerns will encourage local support for important responsible development projects in our coastal communities. The bill focuses on three primary areas: clarifications that districts may develop meaningful policies. It creates a policy board made up jointly of resource agencies and coastal districts. And it brings water and air quality concerns of the Department of Environmental Conservation back to the table. Now, a few years ago, we passed out, I think it was HB 191, which did away with the coastal zone as it had been run for years, where coastal districts felt that they had a seat at the table. And you know, as I look forward to the development of Alaska's resources, much of this development is going to continue to happen in the rural and coastal areas of Alaska. And if there's buy-in from the local areas in bringing the agencies and the people together as this development is being considered, I actually think it can be expedited, and hopefully we can stay out of the courts, because that seems to be the place that people are headed right now. And I just want to give an example of something that we've experienced over the years. You know, this kind of reminds me of, in a lot of ways, what we did with Coastal Zone. With the Coastal Zone program is analogous to what happened in SB 36. You know, we in funding education, we left some communities behind, and with the district cost factors, had that argument for 10 years. Now we're looking forward to development of our coastal resources, continued development of our coastal resources, and we want the communities brought back to the table to have the discussion, to be part of the process. And and I'm probably from my side of the aisle, one of the more development-minded folks, because much of the future development is going to occur from the district I represent, whether it's oil and gas or minerals. And this issue is very, very important to the coastal communities of Alaska. And with that, Madam Chair, I'll answer any questions or attempt to answer any questions, but I'm sure there's a public out there that, in terms of the public hearing part of this, and where I can answer questions, I think there are people behind me that that are better schooled in this area than I am.
Thank you, Representative. Do committee members have questions for Representative Jewell? Thank you for your testimony. Representative Newman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Reggie. I just got a chance to kind of review this draft, the CS. It jumped up a couple of pages from what I had. Representative Jewell, can you tell me what there's changes here that where we approve the organization of a board to look at some of this stuff. What has the DNR not done that you think we need a board to do? And
I can't,
you know, I guess
speak
kind of the reason for this.
And there are people who are going to provide some testimony on that issue. But here's what I can tell you, and I'm sure there are people who work with coastal zone programs throughout the state that are, some of whom are online, and I think they can give some examples. But one of the examples that you know, as coastal districts put together their policies, proposed policies, and forward them on to DNR. In one example, for instance, I think it was the Northwest Arctic Borough, which had 42 proposed policies that they forwarded. Only one was adopted. And so when you have a single agency, it makes it difficult as opposed to having a board to work with. But there are others, because since the implementation of HB 191, one of the reasons, and as in the specifics, people can speak to this, but because of the lack of action from DNR in implementing these things, we've introduced this legislation. And that's not a full answer, but you'll get it from the people that work with it.
Just one more, Madam Chair. Mm-hmm. Reggie, you said that districts may create meaningful policies. What did you expect to happen there?
Well, here again, you're going to hear from the districts, but let me give you an example of something I think that is very, very important to us in rural communities. And that's in the area of developing policies around subsistence, you know, areas where we're going to develop, and subsistence uses. That's not under consideration at this time. I mean, and that's just one example, Representative Newman. It brings back some of the water and air quality issues. You know, we have one of the things that we are looking forward to in this state is the development of our mineral resources. And DEC is not at the table in this process. This gets them there. We have issues, and I'm a huge supporter of the Red Dog Mine, but we have air quality issues with some of the dust control and monitoring, and it gets monitored. But getting people around those issues so that you can be proactive in nipping some of the sensationalism that may occur by a larger body.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Olson.
Good morning, Representative Jewell. I've had the opportunity to work on several earlier versions of this bill, and what I don't remember seeing is on page 6, line 2, and line 5, the inclusion of subsistence. I don't recall that being addressed in previous versions of the bill. Can you tell us a little bit about why it's here now?
Well, it's here in part, I think, because this is a real issue in areas of development, Representative Olson. And rather than try and keep it below the radar, let's put it out there and acknowledge it and deal with it. And in any coastal zone, this has been prior in the efforts to streamline. This has always been an important issue to the local areas. And having said that, to have those issues acknowledged at this level with the partners, I think can actually expedite some of the decisions that are taking place. We had a huge issue with the subsistence and consideration of the Red Dog Mine. It still moved forward. And so I wouldn't see that as a threat. I see that as an opportunity for those considerations to be brought to the table, because ultimately, when all of the resources that we develop are gone, we want to be able to have those renewable resources still available to everybody. So let's deal with it, because those are other resources as well.
Thank you.
Any other questions from committee members? Representative Newman.
Madam Chair, Representative Jewell, on page 5, looking at paragraph 4 in the objectives, this is the management of coastal land and water uses in which a manner that is generally those uses that are economically or physically dependent on a coastal location are given a higher priority when compared to those that which are not economically or physically required to a coastal location. To me, that the first thing that jumps to mind is Pebble Mine when I read that. And it seems to me that would suggest that we're talking about trying to measure, and because Pebble is not on the coast, on coastal waters, certainly have to move to that direction, or it's near that. Does this paragraph or this, does this say that we have to measure the values of Pebble Mine as compared to Bristol Bay fisheries, or, I mean, because that to me is a pretty, there's a lot could be interpreted in paragraph 4, page 5, at the page 20, or lines 28 to 31.
That I'll reserve for probably somebody with a little bit more knowledge behind me to address that, but I'm not sure that it's headed in the direction that you're, and I'll defer that question to somebody behind me.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Newman. Thank you, Representative Jewell. Any other questions? Representative Cisna.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I guess what keeps going through my mind is the board and the reasons why you have a board like this, and the thought of evidence-based decisions, and the fact that you've got local wisdom that actually has thousands of years of evidence-based research that's gone on. And in Kodiak in 1975, I was a part of a community process that had a big town meeting, and it actually put together some of the Kodiak local zone management efforts, because that community felt so far away, and in 75 it was further away from Juneau than it is now. It's not as close, but I'd really like to hear you explain more about the different kinds of things that the board can do with its representation that actually bring in all the disparate parts of the state and the different kinds of issues that it really can flesh out.
Thank you, through the chair, Representative Cisna. You know, one of the advantages of developing this board You stated very accurately. You bring in a lot of expertise, and I would venture to guess a lot of balanced expertise that can be tapped into by state agencies. A lot of ground truth that as we consider development issues and other issues, it can be brought to bear, and the other resources, people resources, can be tapped into as these things move forward. So, you know, you're right that this could really be advantageous to the state. And quite frankly, you know, I think in the history of the development of the North Slope, for instance, as we've looked at developing oil, I think there's been the North Slope Borough and as the coastal zone management was in place, I don't think they really opposed any development that was there. They may have had concerns with it, worked it through the systems. It may have taken a little bit longer, but they were able to reach some consensus and move those projects forward. And I don't think it was until after this HB 191 was passed that we saw actual opposition. So, and that just may have been coincidental, but it just seems like a place where a place where I think things, you could actually create more forward motion than backward motion and still have the concerns vetted and the local input addressed.
Thank you, Representative Jewell. With that, I would, I just pulled the statute. So in answer to Representative Newman's question, the objectives of 4640.020 for the record is already existing language.
That's
the
right.
Only
I'm just
thing
gonna
that,
clarify that
changes is a which to that. And so that's why I was
that's
double
right.
checking.
And I was going to do that. Thank you for that, Madam Chair.
I'm sorry. Thank you, Representative Jewell. We do have a couple new sections in here that is adding to state law. That section one for the committee to reference as we're listening to testimony is a brand new language. And if I've caught them all, the next one is on page 8. Section 10 is a new subsection for your consideration, as well as section 14. With that, it appears to me going through here that everything else is an amendment that you see. So those are the new sections highlighted. With that, we do have a few people off net, but I do like to go for anyone who's traveled to Juneau to see us face-to-face in a committee to ask if there's anyone here in Juneau that would like to testify before Community and Regional Affairs on HB 246. It's an act relating to the Alaska Coastal Management Program and establishing an Alaska Coastal Policy Board. Anyone here in Juneau, the public hearing is now open. If you would give your name for the record, and if you are representing anyone other than yourself, if you would state that also.
Hi, thank you very much for holding this hearing. My name is Terry Camry. I'm a planner with the City and Borough of Juneau. I'd like to thank Representative Jewell for introducing this bill. This is certainly very, very important to the coastal districts. City and Borough of Juneau certainly strongly supports this bill for many different reasons. I think the basic measures outlined here are a really positive step toward restoring the integrity of the coastal management program. It shouldn't be any surprise to any of you here that the coastal program has been under heavy criticism the last number of years since the initial legislation passed from the Murkowski administration. This bill clarifies a lot of confusion over what types of district policies may be allowed. It was a constant battle for a number of years among the districts in dealing with the very subjective language in the regulations that made it a constant debate over what types of policies districts could have, what the requirements were for designations. It turned the whole program upside down and left us all very, very confused. And different districts got different types of policies approved. Some had nearly identical wording that was approved in the case of one district and not in another, because the interpretations were changing and the interpretations were subjective, and that was due to the badly written regulations in the first place. So I think that's the most important thing that, this bill does. In the specific case of Juneau, our original coastal management plan was had 99 policies. In the end, I didn't get the exact number. We just finished our plan after a period of mediation. I believe we're down to 12. So we had a delay in there of a couple of years in sticking out to the end to defend our Juneau wetland management plan. And the language in this bill, by my estimate, would have taken 2 or 3 years off of our permit process just by taking out these different points of subjective interpretation. I think it's in everyone's best interest to make the criteria for district enforceable policies as clear as possible. And I can give you some examples of that if you like, in cases where it was the regulations were wide open and there was significant disagreement, but I don't want you all to glaze over, so I'll hold that point for now. Some questions were raised earlier about why is a coastal policy board needed? What has DNR done wrong? Why is it necessary to bring back another board? You guys are probably all sick to death of boards and policies with what you deal with. I think the coastal policy board, formerly called the Coastal Policy Council, I think it's the Coastal Policy Board in this legislation, is very, very important for the coastal management program because it gives representation from the districts. I believe there are 4 districts represented, but the bigger one for me is that it has representation from 3 different agencies, DEC, Fish and Game, and DNR, where previously all authority was consolidated just in DNR. And of course, any comprehensive review of coastal management issues is going to overlap in a number of areas. You can't separate out air and water quality. You can't separate fish habitat. So I think that's the most critical reason to reestablish the board. If you're looking at different district policies, if you're looking at statewide standards, if you want a fair and balanced review, then you have to have broader agency participation. At the same time, my understanding is that the new Coastal Policy Board is half the size of the previous Coastal Policy Council. So that, in my mind, should make it an efficient board while still providing equal representation and a voice for districts, but also a voice for the overall policies of the program with, again, the views from all the different agencies. I think that's a critical point. The last issue I want to raise is bringing back DEC into the process. I've spoken on this I don't know how many times from the very first time that the HB 191 was introduced. DEC is so important to our local reviews, certainly here in Juneau where we have 5 impaired water bodies that are regulated exclusively by DEC. We have to have their role in the review process. And when DEC comes in after the fact, it creates serious problems, most of all for the developer. When DEC's views are not integrated into the review, and then their comments come out after everything else is done, of course, that just doesn't make sense. You know, we had one case here in Juneau that I've raised this issue over and over again, where the whole coastal management review was completed. But because it involved an impaired salmon stream, and potentially had serious impacts on that stream, DEC came out with their comments later, of course, according to what they're supposed to do, coastal management program, and that changed the whole project after all the review that everyone else had done. It's not DEC's fault at all. But again, I think this is a critical thing that this bill does is restoring DEC's role. Frankly, it doesn't go quite far enough for me. It's not a complete restoration of DEC's role, but it is a good step forward. Another issue that hasn't been raised yet this morning, but I'm going to bring it up in advance, is that a lot of people are saying, well, DNR has launched its own reevaluation of the program. Why do we need this legislation? And I appreciate DNR's effort in doing that. But the issues that this bill is addressing have been raised by the districts over and over and over again. I don't know if these committee members here have received the letter and list of concerns from the Alaska Coastal District Association, of which I'm a board member. I'd be happy to get that letter to you if you don't have it. I believe it was sent to the Senate committee. I'm not certain if it was sent to this committee. So there's that letter listing out concerns, but again, the districts and individual letters and group letters have been raising the concerns that are addressed in this bill for years now. So my main point is I don't see a need to wait for DNR's reevaluation. The problems that this bill is addressing are very well documented. I guess the other issue there is that it frankly disturbs me a bit that DNR is opposed to this bill. I believe they're opposed to this bill. I know they're opposed to the Senate bill. And that indicates to me that they're not really open to these changes. I don't know the specifics of exactly what they're opposed to. But with all due respect to DNR and the very hard work they do, to me that indicates that they're not necessarily open to the changes proposed here. And these are changes that are critical to both the districts, but again, to a balanced decision-making process in the coastal management program. I guess the last thing I want to bring up for those of you who don't have much knowledge of the coastal management program overall is it's not an environmental program. It's described that way, and then you get into this very dangerous and unproductive discussion of pro and anti-development. It doesn't have anything to do with that in my mind. What it is a decision-making tool that brings in all the different parties and allows a district voice, allows an agency voice, allows everyone to come together and make the best decision on these projects. It's extremely rare for a project to be denied. It's a project review process, a permit coordination process that I think benefits the developer overall.
Terry, thank you for coming this morning. Are there questions from committee members? Thank you for your testimony. Here in Juneau, I have Dan Easton. Dan, would you like to testify before us this morning? We do have committee members for those that are sitting in Juneau that will have to leave beginning at 9 o'clock that are testifying in other committees. So, sir, your testimony for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Dan Easton. For the record, I'm Deputy Commissioner of the Department of Environmental Conservation, and I appreciate the opportunity to speak with the committee about this bill. Certainly DNR has a lot more interest, and we'll have more to say about the bill than DEC does, so I'll be relatively brief here. Our interests really boil down to two amendments that appear on page 8 of the committee substitute. The first is in addition that DEC provide notice and opportunity for public comment, which you'd see at the very top of the page. What that is doing is there are instances where we would be making as an agency a consistency finding but not issuing a permit or other form of authorization. So when we issue a permit or other authorization, we have a public notice and opportunity for comment period. And what this new amendment does is to require that even that when we don't issue a permit or authorization to have public notice and comment associated with that, that we would hold a public separate public notice and an opportunity for public comment. So we don't have a particular problem with that. The agency is fine with that amendment. It could potentially add a little bit of time it takes for us to process a finding, but the department doesn't oppose this amendment, and I believe this has been characterized as bringing DEC back into the project, if I understand correctly, and into the program. And if that's the case, fine, we're okay with it. The second amendment is to add a new subsection E, which is further down line 16 on that same page. That is a more complex and confusing, in our case, problematic amendment. What that amendment does is to suggest or to require that the coordinating agency, which may be DNR, may be DEC, evaluate, review whether any air or water discharges associated with a project are consistent with the ACMP standards and the enforceable district policies. But if you look at section B of that same or subsection B of that same section, you'll see that it says clearly there that the state environmental standards, air standards, water quality standards, are the exclusive enforceable policies of the Alaska Coastal Management Program. So whenever there's an air or water discharge, we always review those. They're only authorized if they're comply with state air and water standards. So the review called for under E is something that DEC already does. There are no air or water discharges authorized by the state without a review to make sure that those comply with state air and water standards, and according to subsection B, the air and water standards are the ACMP standard. So to us, this new subsection E is confusing, creates confusion, and we would suggest that it's something that the committee might want to take a hard look at and at least understand further before moving that ahead. And then finally, Madam Chair, just drawing to a close, we acknowledge that there is concern that the coastal districts have been adversely impacted by recent changes to the ACMP program. We recognize that concern as one that must be addressed. No interest in seeing the coastal districts disenfranchised in any way. We believe, though, that in particular, there's an opportunity for better coordination between the DEC permitting process and the coastal management program processes, and certainly committed to working with DNR and the districts to see what improvements can be made. Madam Chair, I also have, I've just summarized written testimony that I have, and I'd be happy to leave with the committee if you'd like. With that, that concludes my testimony. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Easton, if you could give Renee the information, we'll copy it for committee members and distribute that to them. Representative Newman has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Gleason, you referenced subsection E, page 8, and in the sexual analysis, you said that you may have an issue with that, but in the sexual analysis, it says why it's needed is to establish duties of the board. Subsection E clarifies that aspects of the water, air and water discharges not covered by DEC laws or regulations may be reviewed for consistency with statewide standards or district policies. DEC retains authority to determine a project's consistencies with its laws. So that language, at least in the sectional analysis, tells me that you still retain full authority, and that word may doesn't mean that anybody has to do anything.
Madam Chair, Representative Newman, the actual wording of E appears mandatory in that it uses the verb shall. And I think that our attorneys with the Department of Law, and Lindsay Walter, Assistant AG, may be online, might not agree with that interpretation in the sectional analysis.
Any other questions from committee members? We do have online from DNR, Kim Cruz. We have online from the Department of Law, Lindsay Walter. And if it's Walter, I apologize. If it's Walter, I'm glad that I was given the right spelling. Any other questions for Mr. Easton? Do you have an official position as the department, Mr. Easton, from DEC on whether you support the bill or are in opposition to the bill?
Madam Chair, we don't. We defer to DNR as the lead agency for that.
So you defer to DNR. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else here in Juneau, room 124? And by the way, it's not Christmas in Juneau this year, though we did have a light sprinkling of snow. We like to let people know the environment that surrounds us here. And yesterday it was a blanket of white, and this morning it's all melted away, and spring is trying to spring itself into view. Anyone else here in Juneau that would like to testify before the body this morning? Seeing none, we'll go off net. We have from the Barrow, LIO, Johnny Atkins. Johnny, are you there?
Yes.
If you could identify yourself for the record, and if you have an affiliation, state that.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Johnny Aiken. I'm the director of the North Slope Borough Planning Department. On behalf of the North Slope Borough, I would like to speak in support of House Bill 243, the companion bill to Senate Bill 161. This bill goes a long way to fix the problems we faced during the required amendment process for our coastal management plan. Because most of the enforceable policies and designated areas we proposed in the process that were denied by DNR, even after multiple attempts on our part to meet the demands of the agency, the North Slope Borough has requested mediation to resolve our plan revision. One of the biggest problems we had is gaining approval of the relatively few policies we have proposed. Enforceable policies are the backbone of a coastal district program, and without effective policies, coastal management has little value. The reasons used by the last administration to deny our policies are difficult to understand. DNR has recently acknowledged that the approval criteria it has utilized are more stringent than what was intended under House Bill 191, the original 2003 legislation that drastically amended the Alaska Coastal Management Program, has thrown the program into confusion. The bill before you would create more certainty because it makes the enforceable policy approval criteria more clear. The bill would also fix some of the problems we faced with what has come to be known as the DEC carve-out. DEC would still have the final word on all matters it regulates, but it would be at the table with other agencies during the consistency review process. Right now, we believe there are no provisions for comment on air and water quality issues during the coastal management program reviews of the Outer Continental Shelf projects. This bill fixes that. Also, this resolves an unanticipated problem resulting from the carve-out. Currently, the North Slope Borough cannot comment on possible effects on subsistence from an oil spill. Bringing DEC back into the process will allow review of air and water quality issues not regulated by DEC. I would also like to express support for the Coastal Policy Board. If this board was in place during the last few years, I don't think we would be in mediation right now, because the board would include representatives of coastal districts and the state resources agencies. It is more likely to make sound decisions with widespread support. I could tell you a lot more about the frustrations we have experienced during the last few years, but I know you're very busy and don't have very much time. I'd like to conclude my testimony today by saying that the North Slope Borough supports responsible development. Before the Coastal Management Program was reformed in 2003, it provided an excellent forum to work out project-related issues. House Bill 243 creates more incentives for agencies, districts, and applicants to work together. It fixes the problems with the DEC carve-out, and it clarifies the criteria for approval of coastal district plans. I'd just like to thank the Senate Community and Regional Affairs Committee, and especially Don Olson for passing Senate Bill 161. I hope this committee will do the same with House Bill 243 and fix the problems created by House Bill 191. I hope that you will hear our comments and the comments submitted by other districts. I'd like to also thank Representative Jewell for introducing this House Bill 243. So this ends my testimony, and I really appreciate the opportunity to address you today and urge you to approve House Bill 243. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Are there questions from committee members? Thank you, Mr. Atkins, for joining us. There are no questions. Next off net, we have Tom Olisk from the Northwest Arctic.
Yes, Uvla Lotak to the committee. For the record, Uvla Atiga Okliasak. My name is Tom Oklisik, and I'm the planning director for the Northwest Arctic Borough. My testimony addresses the substitute being considered by the committee, and the borough supports this bill because it addresses many of our concerns about the many changes that have been made to the coastal management program in the last few years. Like the North Slope Borough, we have been revising our coastal management plan since 2005, and we have met all the deadlines, all the special requirements and efforts requested by the agency in interpretation of statutes and regulations. But we have not been able to receive approval of our plan since 2005, primarily due to all these changes that have been made. We have proposed a number of policies. Only one has been approved, and our designated areas are also denied. And currently, we're in the mediation process with the state that has been taking over a year. And it should be noted, this is the first time that the state ACMP program has ever had to use the mediation process in the history of the program. For many years, the Coastal Management Program helped the borough assist the state in cooperative efforts to promote responsible development, especially by the residents most impacted in our area. The removal of our ability to establish meaningful, enforceable policies has reduced the value of this program and also reduced the opportunity to promote balanced development that respects all Alaskans. The borough supports House Bill 243 for two major reasons. The first, we believe it brings more balance into decision-making for coastal management issues. And second, we believe the bill makes it clear that coastal districts can establish enforceable policies as long as these policies address matters not adequately covered by state or federal law. The bill also brings balance to the program decision-making by bringing the Department of Environmental Conservation back into the ACMP consistency review process, as Johnny Aiken had stated from Barrow. Creation of the Coastal Policy Board will also ensure that the coastal districts and these resource agencies work together on major coastal issues. We believe the bill will prevent many of the problems we have faced over the past few years in order to effectively implement our program, as well as establish approval of our revised plan, which we believe meets criteria. In conclusion, I'd just like to say the borough supports this bill because it clarifies legislative intent, will reduce complexity of the ACMP regulation, and bring more predictability into the coastal management program, which I think will be good not only for the districts, but also for developers. Kuyana te kulapak for the opportunity to provide testimony on this House bill.
Thank you for joining us this morning. Are there questions from committee members? Representative Newman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Why do you think that, did the DEC tell you why they did not accept any of your recommendations?
It was not DEC, it was DNR.
Or the DNR then?
And simply it came down to interpretation. They gave us a whole set of things that came back, and they did tell us why, policy per policy. And it was simply interpretation, and that's why we're going to mediation. We don't we believe our policies are fine, the state does not, and it's simply a matter of disagreement, and a lot of it's due to these changes that were made in the past. And a lot of the changes that were asked by DNR, we actually changed for them, and just as the woman from Juneau testified earlier, many changes that have been requested have been interpreted many ways. So we've gone in one direction, and the agency has said, no, go in this direction. We went that direction. They said, no, go this direction. And they've just kept us going in circles.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Any other questions from committee members? Seeing none, thank you for joining us this morning. We appreciate your comments.
Thank you.
Kim Cruz, are you online from DNR?
Yes, I am. Thank you.
Do you have testimony this morning on HB? I'm searching here. 243.
Yes, I do, Madam Chair. Thank you very much for the opportunity to testify today. Randy Bates, our program director, would normally be testifying, and he is out of state today. So I appreciate you considering my comments. I am the deputy director for the Coastal Management Program, and I thought I could provide a couple of comments. I first wanted to provide, for the benefit of the committee today, a brief overview of some of the key purposes of the Coastal Management Program. It is a state-managed program that has been in place since the late 1970s, and one of the primary purposes of the Coastal Management Program is to provide project applicants with a single point of contact when their project is located in the state's coastal zone and requires certain state permits or other federal authorizations. The Alaska Coastal Management Program also importantly serves as the state's voice on federal agency activities when those activities affect the state's coastal zone. And as you have heard from some of the other testifiers, the Coastal Management Program is a network program with the purpose of attempting to balance competing state resource agency interests, competing federal agency interests, competing local government interests, competing applicant and industry and other nonprofit and public interests. One of the key components of this Coastal Management Program, as you've heard from some of the other testifiers, is the local input that is provided by the coastal districts on state and federally permitted projects. As also has been noted, statutory changes over the past several years have distanced many of the coastal districts. And I would like to acknowledge that while many of the coastal districts have challenged themselves to meet some exceptionally difficult district planning revision timelines, other districts remain disenfranchised and are actively challenging some of these statutory changes to the program, which brings us to today and this proposed legislation. And I believe the efforts of this legislation illuminate some of the dissatisfaction that coastal districts continue to have with the current management program. And I think that's important to acknowledge that DNR recognizes that. Additionally, I would like to address DNR's proposed program reevaluation, which some of the districts have also spoken to. I think we're fortunate under this administration, our commissioner and deputy commissioners have the administration's support and are committed to reevaluating the Coastal Management Program changes. And I think you should each have in front of you a letter dated February 22nd that outlines the key steps and some of the pertinent issues. And I think this process is really important because of the perception of the process that happened during the past administration, and specifically what the ACMP program also recognizes as important is to readdress the what we call the DEC carve-out or the Department of Environmental Conservation's role in the consistency process. As well, we would also like to revisit the coastal district's authority and their ability to write meaningful enforceable policies. This is not necessarily a discretionary DNR action. It requires either statutory or regulatory change. As well, we would attempt to fix other technical revisions. This reevaluation process will begin in July, and it would run from July through December. And the important part of this evaluation is to bring in all all of our network partners, and that would be the difference between perhaps this legislation in front of you today. The districts are a very, very important part. Their local input is exceptionally valuable. We also have to consider, when we're coordinating projects, many, many other agency and industry interests, and so we believe this reevaluation process would allow all of us to sit back down and try and craft proposed legislation or introduce, basically to have legislation ready next January that represents the wide range and diverse interests of our entire network. And then what we would propose is between May and August of 2009 would be to draft any regulations that would be required as a result of statutory changes. And I think the program reevaluation and any subsequent legislation, it's important that it's done in a manner that allows input from all of our interested participants. And I just really want to stress that I think that's a key factor in moving forward from some of these contentious changes over the past several years. We do have several tasks in front of us, and we plan on beginning this process and involving all of the participants that are part of our program beginning in July. I would also like to comment on the House Bill 243. As currently written, DNR does oppose House Bill 243 for a number of reasons. However, I would like to point out that the efforts of this legislation and the committee members are quite valuable. This legislation serves to start the dialogue and also serves to address key elements that we also believe need to be reevaluated. Basically, DNR does share two of the sponsors' goals, the goal of developing coastal district policies that are both meaningful and effective. And DNR also shares the goal of revisiting the Department of Environmental Conservation's participation in the review process. I would like to point out that specifically with creation of the Coastal Policy Board, although many of the testifiers, the coastal districts, see its value, as currently written, and we've just had a copy of this legislation in the last 2 days, so it's my understanding from reading it, that the management authority for the state's coastal management program, which has been vested with the state since the late 70s, that this legislation would transfer it from the state to a newly created policy board that would consist of 4 appointed public members and 3 commissioners. This seems to create an imbalance and basically transfer state authority to local decision makers. Also, the bill as currently written includes what would appear to be many day-to-day operations, including administering the program, setting and approving policies, managing and approving the district planning process, approving regulations, accepting and managing grant funds. These functions appear to be transferred to and performed by a 7-member board. I would say that some past experience indicates that the creation of a coastal policy type board can result in delayed decision making. It does create duplicate authority and is perhaps not the most efficient way to manage a program. In summary, I guess I would respectfully request that the committee not endorse the language and provisions in this bill, particularly those addressing the Coastal Policy Board and transferring the operations and state management authority to the coastal to this board. DNR does believe that any proposed legislation should include input from all of our network partners to be effective, and we truly look forward to working with the legislature, all of our partners, to hopefully restore some of the confidence and balance to the coastal management program. Thank you very much for this opportunity to comment.
Thank you, Ms. Cruz. Thank you, Ms. Cruz. We do have questions, but you indicated that we should have a letter, and I went through my packet, and I can't find a letter. So can you tell me what we're referring to?
Yes, it is a February 22nd, 2008 letter signed by Randy Bates that outlines the reevaluation process. And there's also a 2-page fact sheet that just gives you some history about the coastal management program.
Thank you. We have it.
Okay, super.
Before us now. Thank you. Representative Cisna.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I actually suddenly realize I have this history. Kim Cruz, thank you for your comments. I guess probably a bias that I have is really having come into this with this history of having watched a local community far away from the seat of government fight for a statutory piece in the decision making that affects their community absolutely more than any other anything other can do, but based far away, and we in the state government now feel that sometimes with Washington D.C. Sort of claiming a place at our table and designing our systems and making those recommendations without funding. And so I'm sort of hearing in this kind of also the frustration that in going to many communities now looking at economic systems and health systems and that kind of thing, I'm hearing that that the state government is very far away and usually makes recommendations without being there and understanding what's happening locally. And just a piece of what you're saying that I'd like to ask you, what process goes through in designing your calendar? You have on your letter a list of how this process is going to take place this year. It starts in June, and one of the things that early on communities were concerned with, and I think they still are right there, is that the weight is on who can be easily at the table, who can get there, who has the time to be there. You start the review process right at the time when people are getting ready to go out and either do subsistence or do industry work, and that process goes through the summer, and then yes, you do hold workshops in November, but the time when people have time is not where the early stuff is not where they actually can be there at the table. And it is set to being able to get something to the legislature in January, but the legislature here has some legislation that is being drafted with local concerns right at the table. And just from the point of view of having both been there originally before coastal zone management started and knowing why it started and then seeing what happened after it was taken out of statute, I'm wondering how we can, in Juneau, shape our process so that it really does weigh in where the effect is felt the most. And I think our local communities is who this body was sent here. We were sent by those local communities. How can state government actually address that?
Thank you very much for that background. If I understand your question, you asked about both the timeline and how the legislative process could address the issues before us with the program. Am I correct in understanding your question?
Well, the sort of the difference between the administration and the legislature is the legislature is made up of people who come from those places. And the administration, and unfortunately what we had right at the same time that we did away with the coastal zone management function in the way it had been designed, we also were cutting travel and training. And so the administration side has lost some of the tools that it needed, and I've watched that now over the last 10 years, so that it's harder for the administrative side to really see what it's like in the communities that it's really affecting. And I'd love to have the department really figure out how to fix that part, because I'm watching it happen.
I'm not quite sure how to address that. I just want to be clear with whatever I respond to that I'm understanding your question. It sounds like you have a very important local perspective. And obviously with this program, I'm not sure how much of everything that you've mentioned that we can resolve. But the Coastal Management Program looks at the very, very beginning of a project slated for development and tries to pull in through the Coastal Management Program that very important local piece. And as well, we look to all the other participants or partners in that particular project and upfront identify key issues. Once our portion of the review process is complete, the project then moves to the responsible permitting agencies. Local districts additionally have the opportunity to submit comments and notice as well through those processes. So I think one of the unique things about the Coastal Management Program that has made it successful in the past is it's one of the few programs. It's a voluntary outreach, and the districts can choose to participate or not, but they have. And so the district and local perspective has historically been a very, very important part of this program. You know, through the changes that happened during the past administration, it's been very difficult for the districts to come up with policies that didn't duplicate or restate other state or federal laws. And you've heard several of them talk about the number of policies they have available now. And that's what they want. They want to be able to have something meaningful to contribute to the review process. And I think that's what the department is committed to working on, because we do have the support. So I'm hoping that the districts will participate in that review process. And again, you've mentioned the timelines. In Alaska, it seems like there's never a good time to start or finish anything. There's always one group. But I think the importance from what the districts are asking for and their support for the legislation in front of you shows that they care. And I think they care enough to find a way for themselves or a representative to be available if they truly want to make these changes. And I think the DNR can assist with that reevaluation and making the program more balanced.
Representative Cisna?
Thank you. And thank you, Kim Cruz. And I think you have pointed out to me exactly why this is an important piece of legislation. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Are there any questions from committee members for Ms. Cruz? Seeing none, thank you for joining us and waiting patiently. Lindsay Walter, I have you online from the Department of Law available for questions. Do you have any comments on this legislation?
No comments.
Is there anyone else off net that I haven't recognized that hasn't signed in? Anyone at all? Is there anyone here in Juneau that would like to testify on HB 243? Seeing none, the public hearing is closed. Representative Jewell.
Thank you. I'll be very brief. Just a comment on one of the statements about the seeming difficulty in accepting a 4-3 board. The prior board was 14. There were 9 coastal communities and 5 state agencies. They had more authority and no mediation. We are looking at, since the inception of 191, we've heard today at least 3 instances of mediation. And I'll make 2 points, and then I know you want to move on and bring this to a conclusion, and hopefully we'll review this legislation in a future hearing shortly and pass it out so it can get further review. But, you know, as we develop our resources in the state of Alaska, we really want local people to be part of the process. It is important. Otherwise, we're gonna end up all over the map, and we're going to slow that down, and jobs and energy and all that it means is too important. We can cut to the chase here by inviting, welcoming, and not having a sense of paranoia over having that local involvement. And quite frankly, you know, one of the reasons this bill was introduced is, I mean, and you've seen that DNR has kind of more stringently so it kind of overreached and up until now has been non-responsive to community issues. And it takes a bill like this to get people's attention and get people to the table. And it's a good thing that is happening. And I want to see this thing move forward. I want to see us be able to have a more of a consensus view of how we can continue to build this state. The best way, as I stated earlier, is to involve the people at the local level. It means a lot to all of us. And we all know what it's like to be part of something and be left out of something as important as this. And I thank you for hearing the bill today, and I look forward to working with you. And one final note, in case we had prepared a sectional, and I'm not sure if got included in your packet, I think it did, but it's a little different than should be a little bit different for each section, what it does, why it's needed, what it doesn't do. And if you don't have that,
Madam Chair, we don't have the same.
Okay, then I will make sure that between now and the next meeting, some of the issues that were brought up, I think, are addressed. And again, Madam Chairman, and members of the committee, it's been a long time since I've been in this room, and I remember why now I don't introduce very many bills. Thank you very much.
Representative Jewell, we love to have you part of our discussion. You bring such a wisdom and fruit to the table for our consideration.
And because I don't introduce very many bills, that speaks to the importance of this one.
Thank you. I had told Representative Jewell prior to hearing it today that we would close the public hearing and cogitate on what was presented as far as new pieces to the legislation and how that would affect the administration. And so with that, I am ready to close the meeting off, but I'd like to know the will of the committee about Tuesday morning, 8 o'clock, Community and Regional Affairs meeting. Right now it's bills previously heard. Representative Ledoux and I will not have time to meet. I come in from a town hall meeting on Monday evening, and she's not here for her and I to discuss either bills, so that I understand a comfort level for moving those bills forward. We have a bill on the schedule from Representative Gatto. I want to know if we want to meet or if we want to move Representative Gatto's bill to Thursday to take up everything that we have on our plate. Do you want to meet on Tuesday, or do you, Representative Dahlstrom?
Madam Chair, my preference would be that we meet on Thursday so that you and Representative Ledoux have a chance to talk, and also so I can participate. I won't be here Tuesday morning.
That's what I was concerned with. Some members had indicated that for those, again, in the audience and listening at home, the legislature has been in session for over 2 months. Some have went home on occasion, and our leadership has made it available for over Easter weekend to shut down quite a bit of committee work on Friday and Monday. So I'm wondering how quickly we can get back to quorum, and so that's why I'm asking the committee on the record today. I just want to make sure that when we get back to work, we're ready to work and roll up our sleeves and start moving these things along. Representative Sisna?
Yes, Madam Chair. I also am going to a constituent meeting and a whole series of meetings this weekend through Monday, but I would be more than willing to change my plans and get back for Tuesday morning, because we've got I think about 3 full weeks left before the end of this session, and I come here to work, and the people in my district understand that cutting sleep is perfectly all right. So that's what I'd be willing to do.
The issue is not the committee cutting sleep at all. The issue is Representative Ledoux and I will not have a time to have a conversation about the bills that are in committee right now. Specifically, the department has concerns, and Representative Ledoux doesn't know what those are because she wasn't here this morning. And the second issue is that she represents a coastal community that I think that she probably wants to weigh in on. And she and I haven't discussed this bill. I said that I would move forward so that we were ready to move it right away when we came back into session, close the public hearing so that she can review those tapes and then digest that. So please don't think it's not anyone's willingness to work longer or harder. It has to do with flights getting into Juneau, and she and I having an opportunity to meet with Ledge Legal if she wants to offer an amendment. Representative Newman indicated that there was a section that he had concerns with. I think I addressed those, but I haven't discussed that with him. So that's my intent. Representative Olson?
I'm going to try to do this delicately. I think I'm going to be calling for a vote, and I'm going to tell you why I'm going to be calling for a vote. If we wait till next Thursday, I think this is a very important bill, first off. I think if we wait another week, we will have burned up one of the 3 weeks. It'll be next Thursday before Representative Jewell's bill gets voted on, and that's assuming that your co-chair is back. We all know why she's out today. I have my personal feelings on that, and I won't share them with the committee. But I'd like to call for a vote on this bill today.
Okay.
Sorry, I hope that doesn't offend you, but I hate seeing it lose a week for obvious reasons.
Okay, that's fine.
I think most of us made our mind up.
Any other comments from committee members? Is there an objection, or do I have a motion to move the bill?
I would move. Are we on version A?
No, we're on version C. That's what's before us.
I'd move version C.
I'll object.
With attached fiscal notes and
individual recommendations.
Individual recommendations. And
Madam Clerk, I'm going to maintain my objection.
Representative Salmon?
Yes.
Representative Dahlstrom?
Yes.
Representative Newman, not present. Representative Olson?
Yes.
Representative Sisna?
Yes.
Co-Chair Ledoux, not present. Co-Chair Fairclough?
No.
4-1.
That bill moves from committee.
And I'm available Tuesday.
The committee.
I'll change my plate too, Madam Chair.
So
if we need to come back for it, you know.
The committee will be meeting to hear Representative Gatto's bill on Tuesday at 8 a.m. With that, the committee's adjourned.